Handel. Nobody could find little George Frederick Handel that snowy day in 1691 in the village of Halle, Germany. The six-year-old had been taking a walk with his aunt when suddenly he disappeared. Now the town crier roamed the crooked streets, ringing his bell and proclaiming, 7 o'clock and a little boy lost, 7 o'clock and a little boy lost. At the Handel house, George's father, who was a surgeon, stood at the window watching the drifting snowflakes and waiting for his wife and her sister to return. They had been looking for George for nearly 2 hours now, and he'd expected them back much sooner. But when they finally arrived, they were even more alarmed than when they'd left. They'd walked everywhere, they'd talked to everyone, and still there was no sign of the child. The boy's aunt was particularly distraught. "I can't understand it," she said. "One moment he was holding my hand, and the next moment he'd completely vanished." It was then that the faint sounds of music could be heard in the street. Dr. Handel looked out the door and saw a band of wandering minstrels marching through town in time to the music they were playing. They were being led by a flickering torch, and holding the torch was, yes, his own son George. George looked ecstatic, completely unaware of the worry he'd caused. He carried the torch proudly and sang along with the minstrels at the top of his voice. Dr. Handel was furious. George wanted to obey his father's command to come into the house immediately, but he couldn't, simply couldn't, leave the song unfinished. He continued with the melody until it reached its finale, then somberly stepped inside for what he knew would be a very serious scolding. The scolding George received that day was like many other lectures his father had given him before. Music was not a suitable interest. It would be neither a respectable nor a lucrative profession. Music was only for the wandering minstrels, like the ones George had followed, who begged for food and clothing in each town they passed through. Dr. Handel had other plans for his intelligent little son. Someday he would be a lawyer. But George Frederick Handel never did become a lawyer. In spite of his father's warnings, he remained true to his love of music. And what he did become was one of the world's greatest composers and the author of the most famous of all oratorios, The Messiah. Handel was born February 23, 1685, within only 4 weeks of and 100 miles from another great Baroque master, Johann Bach. People think of Handel as an Englishman. He was an English citizen, and his greatest single work is in the English language, but in reality, he was German-born and trained in Italy. His birthplace was the small town called Halle near Leipzig. Most composers were born into musical families, or at least families where there was a deep appreciation of music. This wasn't the case with Handel. His father always protested his boy's interest in music and did little to encourage his unique talents. But nothing could stop George Handel, even as a child. As a young boy, he smuggled a clavichord into the attic and snuck upstairs to play it when his parents were sound asleep. Even when there was no candle and he couldn't see the keyboard, and even in winter when his fingers were numb with cold, he still played on. He ran to the window at sunset each day to listen to the chimes from the church tower nearby. He begged his mother and aunt to take him on walks through the town where he could hear the singers or the band that played in the market square. Everywhere in Halle there was music. Sometimes, when George was very lucky, his father would take him when he had to attend a patient at court. Then George would get to hear the beautiful music of the palace orchestra. Always, music was George's single, overwhelming passion. When he was 7, his father allowed him to take lessons on the organ, with the strict reminder that law, and not music, was to be his profession. He was so adept that by the time he was only 12, he became the assistant organist at the city's cathedral. He also learned the piano, the violin, and the oboe. Even though his father died when Handel was only 11, he still felt obligated to at least try and follow his father's wishes, so he enrolled in law school at the University of Halle. He lasted exactly 1 year. At the age of 18, Handel moved to Hamburg, one of the important musical centers of Germany, and became a violin player for the opera orchestra. He composed 2 operas in Hamburg, and then, when he was 21, he did what almost all young aspiring musicians did at the time. He set out for the grand tour of Italy. Handel spent 4 years in Italy, traveling in Florence, Venice, Rome, and Naples. A citizen of Rome who kept a diary in those years recorded, "A German has arrived here, an excellent harpsichordist and composer. Today he demonstrated his skill by playing the organ in the Church of St. John to the admiration of all who heard him. In Rome at Christmas time, Handel also heard a group of shepherds from Calabria singing and playing their Christmas carols. He never forgot the beauty of that night, and years later, when he was writing the Messiah, he remembered the shepherds when he wrote, "There were shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flocks by night." He said it was as if the gates of heaven had opened and the angels themselves were singing, "Glory to God in the highest and peace on earth, goodwill toward men." During the entire time he was in Italy, Handel was absorbing the Italian musical style and composing new works, including his first two oratorios written in Italian. He also wrote two operas. When his work was performed in Italy, he became a sensation. After a performance of his Agrippina, the audience cried out, "Viva il caro Sassone! Long live the beloved Saxon!" There's also a story of a musical contest between Handel on organ and the famous opera composer Alessandro Scarlatti on harpsichord. Although he'd already become nationally known in Germany, by the time he left Italy, Handel was internationally famous. When he returned to Germany, he settled in Hanover, where he was made the city's musical director. The man who appointed him was then elector, or ruler of the city, but soon he would become King of England. It was he who encouraged Handel to make his first trip to England. Handel wasn't happy when he returned to Hanover. Working at a small German court was a disappointment after the excitement of his travels and successes in Italy. He also had no operas to write, just chamber music to please the elector and his family. So, after only a few months, he set out for London, the richest city in the world, and a city that loved music. When Handel arrived in England, he was 25 years old and he spoke not one word of English. Shortly after he arrived, he began work on his opera Rinaldo, of which he said, "The music just poured out of me." At the time, Italian opera was still pretty new in England, and even then people were listening chiefly to the lighter comic operas being written by young Italians. Still, Handel's Rinaldo was so well received, and Handel was made to feel so welcome in England that he returned to Germany with deep regret. Back in Germany, Handel studied English and wrote letters to everyone he knew in London. After a stay of only a year, he obtained a leave of absence and returned to England once more. This time, the visit would last almost 50 years. Back in England again, Handel made a big hit with Queen Anne when he wrote Ode for the Queen's Birthday. She liked it so much, she gave him an annual allowance of £200. When Handel was 29 years old, the Queen died, and his former employer in Hanover, the Elector, became King George I of England. Handel then made a very understandable decision about his life. He had a friend who was now king, and the English people had taken a liking to him as well, so he made England his permanent home. 13 years later, when he was 42, he became an English citizen. Handel, now feeling quite at home in England, bought a tall stone house on Brook Street, which remained his home until he died. He became composer of the Chapel Royal, which made him the official composer to the Crown of England. He wrote volumes of music during this time, including the coronation anthems for George II and the funeral anthem for Queen Caroline 10 years later. Handel often wrote quickly, in a state of complete absorption. Later he would be overcome with exhaustion and hunger. During one phase of consuming work, he sent word to a local tavern to prepare a dinner for two. When he arrived, the owner of the tavern asked him when his company would be arriving. "I am the company," said Handel, and then he proceeded to eat his way through two full meals. Handel's favorite time to compose was summer, when the days were long and the light was good. Handel wore a curly white wig, as was customary of the time, and he often smoked a long pipe. He never married, and if ever had any romances, they remained secret. A friend of his once reported that Handel fell in love often, but always for a very short time, and always with women in the musical profession. He had a dry sense of humor, and occasionally he showed a temper. He even had a duel once when he was younger, but he was saved when his opponent's sword struck a large button on his coat. Even later in his life, Handel was known for his rather rough manner and his frequent swearing, although he also had a big heart. He sent money to the widow of a former teacher and helped many other people in need. He also had a deep love of art. He owned several Rembrandts, and many of his friends were painters. Occasionally, Handel left England for visits to the continent, usually to hire singers for his performances. On one such visit, he made a brief visit to his family home back in Halle. Johann Bach, who heard he was home, traveled 20 miles on foot to meet Handel, only to find that by the time he arrived, Handel had left. The two never met. Handel often had trouble with the singers he hired and worked with. There were frequent arguments about the music and fiery debates about whether each was performing as the other would like. A famous soprano who came to England to perform in one of Handel's operas had a prima donna temper tantrum and refused to sing one of the songs he'd written. Handel picked her up bodily, carried her to a window, and threatened to throw her out unless she did as she was told. She sang the song. On another occasion, when he was rehearsing his opera Flavio, Handel was accompanying the singers on the harpsichord. A tenor complained about Handel's playing, saying, "If you don't follow me better than that, I'll jump on your harpsichord and smash it to bits." "Go right ahead," said Handel. "Only, please, let me know when, and I will advertise it, for more people will come to see you jump than to hear you sing." For his first years in England, Handel continued to write music in the Italian style. But soon he couldn't help but be influenced by English music, especially choral music. He became director of the Royal Academy of Music, which devoted itself to performances of Italian opera. But meanwhile, he explored other styles in his own compositions. Soon he was London's leading opera director, its favorite composer, and one of the most important opera composers of the entire Baroque period. Although Handel considered opera the highest form of art, it began to lose favor in London after a few years, mostly because people became weary of music presented in a language they couldn't understand. What became popular instead was an English play called The Beggar's Opera, which was a parody of Italian opera. Handel began to find there was less and less an audience for his work. At the beginning, he tried to keep cheerful about it. When a friend commented on the poor attendance of one of his concerts, he told him it was all right because his music sounded better in an empty theater. Handel was hesitant to give up Italian opera even when he began to lose money on it. Gradually, he became depressed and reclusive, strolling the dark streets at night and remaining locked inside his house during the day. More and more, he began to think about and work in other forms, especially the English oratorio. He sometimes used English writers for his inspiration, including the poet John Milton. When he was 56, around the year 1741, Handel decided to give up opera altogether to concentrate on oratorios. The decision came in part from an invitation from the Duke of Devonshire, who was the king's representative in Ireland. The Duke asked Handel to compose something for Dublin for a benefit for the poor. The assignment was just what Handel needed to bring him out of his doldrums and to help get over his attachment to the unpopular Italian opera form. Handel responded to the Duke by promising him an oratorio. An oratorio, he said, would be called the Messiah. He already had the idea for the Messiah because his friend Charles Jennens had given him the script or libretto for it. Now he would create the music. He worked feverishly on the Messiah, beginning it on August 22, 1741, and finishing it less than a month later, on September 14th. He wrote so quickly that the ink was still wet on one page while he was starting another. His score was covered with splotches, but he never even noticed them. He said later, "Whether I was in my body or out of my body as I wrote the Messiah, I know not." Handel wrote the Messiah in the living room on the first floor of his house on Brook Street. He seldom left his desk. A servant brought him his meals, but they were often left untouched. The servant said later that Handel was often weeping as he wrote, and that once he was sobbing with emotion as he scrawled notes on his pages. At the time, he was writing the Hallelujah Chorus. In December, 2 days before Christmas, he began the first private concerts of the Messiah in Dublin, and then in April, it had its first public performance. While preparing for the first performance of the Messiah, Handel put out a call for choirmen who could sing at sight so he could quickly try out a few of his new, hastily written songs. One bass singer volunteered, and Handel asked him to sing the section, "And with his stripes we are healed." The singer made several attempts to sing the piece, but failed miserably at each one. Handel, after swearing in 3 or 4 different languages, finally said in English, "Did you not tell me you could sing at sight?" "Well, yes, sir," responded the bass, "and so I can, but not at first sight." Eventually, all these problems were worked out, and the Messiah, or the Sacred Oratorio, as Handel sometimes called it, was ready for the public. The premiere of the Messiah was one of the greatest events to ever take place in Dublin. In order to make room for all the people expected to attend, a request was sent out asking the favor of the ladies not to come with hoops, and the gentlemen are desired to come without their swords. Everybody who was anybody was at the Dublin Music Hall that night. There were 700 members of the nobility, gentry, and clergy, all crammed into a space designed for 500. Hundreds more stood outside, hoping for a chance to get in. The choirs of two cathedrals had trained night and day for 2 weeks for their parts. For this very first performance of the Messiah, there were about 40 singers. Today, hundreds and sometimes thousands gather to sing it. That first audience wept at Handel's music, sat as if in a trance, whispered its praise, and thunderously applauded. A Dublin review the next day said, "It's the most finished piece of music, apt to transport and charm the ravished heart and ear. Words are wanting to express the exquisite delight it afforded." To meet public demand, the Messiah was performed again a month and a half later. The most exciting performance of the Messiah was the one in London a few years later when Handel himself conducted. The tickets sold out immediately, even though the price, half a guinea, was very high for those days. All proceeds were being donated by Handel to the Foundling Hospital, a home for abandoned children that he'd adopted as his own favorite charity. The concert was going to be in the new chapel of the hospital, and Handel was going to play on the small new organ he'd donated to the children. The children themselves were going to sing in the choir. Handel had been training them for a full year. On the night of the performance, so many people showed up that pushing, shoving, and fights broke out. The only way to calm the crowd was to promise another performance later in the month. Inside, as the Hallelujah Chorus was performed, the Prince of Wales rose from his seat and, with the princess and the whole audience, bowed to Handel in tribute. It has ever since been a custom for the audience to rise during the famous chorus. Handel conducted the Messiah every year for the hospital fund as long as he lived, but as he approached the age of 60, his health began to fail. He'd already suffered a minor stroke 8 years earlier, and now his friends became worried. One of them, who saw him at a performance, said he'd appeared dejected, wan, and dark. In spite of this, the decade that followed the Messiah was a productive and successful one. It was in these years that Handel made oratorios and large choral works the most popular musical form in England. Besides his extraordinary musical talents, Handel was known throughout England for his sense of charity and his humanitarian efforts. He was not only a benefactor and a governor of the Foundling Hospital, but he helped with other philanthropic causes too. He was said to be a man of deep concern about the world, who worshipped twice a day in a church near his home. Handel continued to write oratorios until, near the age of 66, he began to lose his eyesight. He underwent eye surgery, but the operation seemed to have little effect. Finally, he could no longer see his own notes and had to give up composing completely. It happened while he was working on a chorus that went, "How dark, O Lord, are thy decrees, all hid from mortal sight." Handel was almost completely blind when he gave up composing, but still, he remained active in the field of music. He continued to conduct, and the audience was often in tears, watching him being led to his organ and realizing, as one fan wrote, that his light had been spent by being overplied in music's cause. Only the day before he died, he conducted a Holy Week performance of the Messiah. Handel died April 14, 1759, at the age of 74, in bed at his home in London. He first said goodbye to his friends, telling them they would meet again. He then told his servant that he was now done with the world. He was buried in the Poet's Corner at Westminster Abbey in the presence of 3,000 people. In his will, he left all future proceeds from the Messiah to the Foundling Hospital. The small alley near the Foundling Hospital was renamed Handel Street, as it remains today. The work of George Handel is far more extensive than many people realize. He's best known for his English oratorios, but he was also one of the Baroque period's leading opera composers. He wrote about 40 operas, most based on heroic historical figures and some on fantasies and magic. Some of his most famous operas, written mostly when he was in his 30s and 40s, include Julius Caesar, Tamerlano, Orlando, Alcina, and Circe. Besides opera and oratorios, Handel wrote church music, vocal music, chamber music for small groups of instruments, and instrumental music of all types, especially the concerto. The best known of his instrumentals are two orchestral suites, Water Music, written when he was 32, and Royal Fireworks Music, written many years later when he was 64. Water Music was written for King George upon his arrival from Germany to take the throne of England. It was called Water Music because it was written to be performed for the king at a supper he was having on the banks of the River Thames. The king liked it so much, he had it played over again 3 times. The music for the Royal Fireworks was written to celebrate the end of the Silesian Wars and a resulting peace treaty in 1749. It's said that 12,000 people showed up for a rehearsal of this music in Vauxhall Gardens, causing a 3-hour traffic jam over London Bridge. The first time Royal Fireworks was performed, a fire actually broke out when part of the structure built for the fireworks ignited. The Royal Fireworks was one of many compositions in which Handel captured the spirit of 18th century England and its people. While he was alive, the English considered him a significant part of their national culture. To most of the world, Handel will always be most popular as a composer of English oratorios, of which he wrote more than 25. The oratorio developed in Italy as a musical drama to be played without staging. It got its name from the oratory, a meeting room of a religious association in which the first oratorios were often presented. Usually, singers would represent characters in a biblical story or in the life of a saint. Sometimes there was also a narrator who filled in some of the details of the story. There was often a chorus of singers who represented groups of people or crowds reacting to the events of the story. Although the Messiah overshadows all of Handel's other work, he wrote many other outstanding oratorios during the same period, including Samson, Belshazzar, Solomon, Theodora, and Jephthah. These oratorios are mostly based on stories from the Old Testament. They're written in 3 acts, like operas are, but like all oratorios, they're performed in concert only, no staging or action. Handel's oratorios are famous for the prominent and innovative way he uses the chorus. Most of his oratorios were first performed in theaters, and audiences paid admission just as they would for an opera. By the time he was 55, Handel had abandoned opera altogether to concentrate full-time on the oratorios. It was the following year, when he was 56, that he wrote his famous masterpiece, The Messiah. It's the most influential and widely performed oratorio of all time. Although most of Handel's oratorios were based on stories from the Bible, The Messiah is an exception. It's based solely on quotations. These quotes were gathered from the Bible by Handel's friend Charles Jennens, and then Handel chose the ones that worked best with the music. He said it was easy, that Jennens had chosen the quotes and put them in such an order that they were musical to begin with. In all his future correspondence with Jennens, Handel always referred to the masterpiece as "Your Messiah." The Messiah contains no story or dramatic action, but through the quotes, Handel illustrates the founding of Christianity in songs and tells of the prophecy of Christ's coming, his birth, life, death, and resurrection.
Thank you.
The Messiah was first heard in that little theater in Dublin in the year 1742, when Handel was 57. Its popularity then, as now, has much to do with its glorious and versatile choruses. They range from moods of meditative to cheery to solemn to triumphant. The most famous chorus of all is the thrilling Hallelujah Chorus. It's almost like an anthem, not to a country, but to a kingdom. This is the chorus that Handel sobbed over as he worked. He later said it was as if he saw God on his throne and all his angels around him. Today, from England, where it was first performed, to New England and all over the Western world, every year at Christmas and at Easter, choirs unite in small chapels and great cathedrals, in schools, concert halls, on radio and television, to sing the Messiah. Meanwhile, in thousands of homes, people play recordings to listen to or sing along with. For over two centuries, Handel's Messiah has remained the ultimate musical expression of Christianity and of what is both sublime and majestic in the Christian spirit.
This is the end of the session.